Children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul the key. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul the key.
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And our show is brought to you by our sponsor, starlights.com. That's starlights.com and alternativecancer.us. And both of them are wonderful sponsors, and you will find products at Starlights that will make your life more fun. And massive information on how to deal with different types of cancers and how to test which treatments are going to work better for you, and you know, just a lot of things that can really help you on alternativecancer.us. So please do check them out if you haven't yet. It's good information to have. You might need to pass it on sometime if you don't need it now. Now tonight I have as my co-host Dr. Lenny Time, and welcome to the show, Lenny. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Great to be back, Dr. Valerie.
It is just so much fun. I was thinking about it when I asked Lloyd Meir to be our guest tonight, and they'll be bringing Lloyd on in a little bit. And the reason I asked you to be on with me to talk to Lloyd is because of your background in the new university that you and Dr. Miller are creating, and a host of really stellar people. And about bringing a new consciousness through the children and, well, through anybody that's interested. And Lloyd has a system that he's developed that's based on numbers that changes the frequencies in the body and the environment. And he's done some pretty amazing things, like taken some special water and actually had minerals drop out of the water into, like, chunks. And that's pretty interesting. It's kind of where you go, whoa, that's the way it's supposed to be. Like, how did he do that? And he's a dowser and an engineer. So that's going to be a lot of fun to kind of explore, you know, where we think this might be going. And I'm very excited about this because, you know, I like all these things that seem crazy, that people think are impossible. And I think this is just going to be massive fun tonight. Now, hopefully we can get Lloyd. He said that he might be traveling. So,
well, I've been spent much of this winter up in Montana. I was working on a mining project, and the mining project didn't go the way we expected, so I ended up working on writing some books. Mm-hmm. And one of the books I was writing was on a topic called numeracy. And one of Buckminster Fuller's engineers, a gentleman named Bob Marshall, had written this up as a different type of look at mathematics. So I'm very interested to see what Lloyd came up with and compare that to the Marshall work that I'm working on.
Now, see, I didn't know any of that, so this is really fascinating to me. This just shows you how the universal mind works, because I just, you know, your mind just as on those same tracks, you know, and mine apparently is too, because your face just popped up in front of me, and I thought, you know what, I got to have Lenny on to talk about this, because I just knew there was something in there that you could bring that I didn't really know anything about, and so I really hope we can get a hold of Lloyd, because if not tonight, it'll be another night. But basically, you know, I've been fooling around with number frequencies now for a while myself. And last year I did a workshop on the Grigori Grabovoi number system. And it's quite magical. You know, I've seen changes in myself and changes in the people I've worked with. And it seems too easy. You read a sequence of numbers to somebody and all of a sudden they're changed. It's like, whoa, that's kind of interesting.
There are different things coming down the pike in a lot of different areas of science that seem to have stepped out from the commonly accepted beliefs of science. And part of that, I believe, is that science in the world today has locked itself in a box where, in order to keep up a myth of explaining how things work, they keep having to draw out the strings longer and longer and longer. Mm-hmm. Whereas nature works in a very simple pattern, she just doesn't count very well. So instead of taking numbers as just things to be multiplied, divided, and processed by mathematics, we can take the numbers as just numbers, and they have inherent meaning.
Yeah, and that's something that, I mean, I know that people have known about this for millennia, some people, and I know it's been kept from the general public. But when you start working with this stuff, it is so fascinating to feel the vibration of the numbers and to... Well, for instance, when I was teaching some sacred geometry classes, I would show people what 1 was and what 2 was and 3 mm-hmm. and 4 and things like that. And I would show them the sacred geometry shapes. And then I would have them build these little shapes, three-dimensional sacred geometry shapes, out of the bamboo skewers that you buy for barbecuing and stuff.
Okay.
And I would just take those and some hot glue. And we'd glue them together at the right angles and everything else. And then I'd say, okay, contemplate that. What do you feel? You know, what does this mean? And, you know, close your eyes, take a deep breath, and go within. And they would all come out with very similar things, which shocked everybody. And then I'd say, well, you know, why is that such a shock? Because we all came from this universal soup. We're all made out of the same stuff. We look pretty much the same. We act pretty much the same. And, you know, you can cut people open and they look the same inside. So, you know, there's got to be some unifying force. And I keep remembering from my childhood hearing that mathematics is the universal language. And I wish I'd paid more attention to math, you know, at that point. but it's just been fascinating to see these changes coming along. And, you know, from my aspect, I look at it as a physician. You know, I can go sit somebody down and take them through a guided visualization with a string of numbers, and they will be changed, and they have mind-blowing experiences. So this is just totally fascinating to me. But go ahead and tell me about the numeracy project that you were working on.
Okay.
Apparently Lloyd's not.
Pardon?
I'm sorry, I was just going to tell you that Lloyd is not answering, so he's probably on the road. So it may be just you and me, Lenny.
Okay.
Let's go for it.
The numeronomy and the numeracy that Bob Marshall was talking about, it has to do with the recognition that numbers are reversible mm-hmm. and that as you count up, you also count backwards. Mm-hmm. Multiplication is the opposite of division, and addition is the opposite of subtraction. So that there should be something when a number reverses. Well, Bob Marshall, because he looked at patterns of numbers a lot, started to develop some patterns that depended on palindromicity. You know what a palindrome is, the same numbers are the reverse of themselves. But he started noticing that there were some trans-palindromic reversals. Prime numbers like 37 and 73 are the reverse of each other, and they're both prime. So he started defining numbers as either prime numbers or composite numbers. Mm-hmm. And he came up with a theory that all odd numbers would be prime if they didn't have previous predecessors that made them not prime. So you start looking at the odd numbers of 1, 3, 5, and 7, and they're all prime. But 9 is not prime, not because of anything that 9 did, but because 3 times 3 is 9. Mm-hmm. And so as he started working with these numbers and started linking the transpalindromic prime numbers, he then started looking at square numbers. And like 16 is a square number because it's 4 squared. Uh-huh. Well, the opposite of 16 is 61, which is prime. And he started noticing relationships between prime numbers and square numbers. And so he built a theory that cataloged all numbers, and he found that he could predict which numbers would be prime and which numbers are not prime. Well, there are some mathematical prizes for people who can predict that with equations, but he didn't really use equations. He just envisioned this whole system, and he thinks that the number system in base 10 works like a waveguide. And if you take the multiples of 9 on one side and connect them, they're all transpalindromic with each other, 18 and 81, 72 and 27, they're all multiples of 9. So you connect them on one side of your little chart, and then you take the multiples of 11, 22, 33, 44 are all palindromic numbers, and that pretty much takes you up to 100, where the numbers either are multiples of 9 or 11, and when you link them together, it just makes them awesomely neat designs. 101, 202, 303, 404 are also palindromic. And so as you build up, you can just see where numbers originate when there's a need, and the whole number system is totally symmetric. It makes you think that whoever came up with the base 10 number system probably came up with the concept of zero and several other things at the same time. And it's just fascinating how if you don't do anything more than just take multiples of the same number, you can create things that look like waveguides. It wasn't until the 1950s that quantum mechanics actually assigned waveforms, and even then they can only do the hydrogen atom. You can't get too much bigger because the math gets complicated. But Bob Marshall's math is real simple. So I'll be coming out hopefully this spring with a book on that.
That is really making a lot of sense to me now, because I've observed certain things. I think I've told you before that the way that I work, you know, with quantum physics and the holographic universe and things like that is not on the science end like you and Rick, but more in the experiential feeling intuitional end. And it's, you know, I know when something's right because I feel it and it makes perfectly good sense to me. Not that I could repeat it, mind you, but it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I have those aha moments, and I'm having these moments now as you're talking about this. And it's like there's this gap there that, you know, the spark just flies across the gap, you know, and I'm like, oh, this could explain a whole lot of things. Like, you know, I've always been interested in chemistry, especially biochemistry. I love biochemistry. And the whole reason I do is because it makes absolute ultimate sense, except when you go to apply it to the body processes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you look at how a baby is formed, it's magic. Okay, that's all it is. It's just freaking magic. Because, you know, somehow the body knows how to take these little tiny starts of something that's going to be differentiated and move it to the exact right place. It's like, wow, how does that happen?
Yeah, when you get at the cell division level, right when you start off, 1 going to 2 and 2 going to 4 are so crucial in that process. And yet there's nothing that we can differentiate up until it gets up to 8. And cell division works pretty nicely because it's all division by two. One cell breaks apart, it makes two. Mm-hmm. But nature works with the Fibonacci sequence. And when you start looking at different birth patterns and flowers and different things, you find that it goes 1, 1, 2, 3, 5 rather than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. And I found that interesting that nature knows that things work exponentially, even though we as people try and force everything into our own linear models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing that's interesting too about the Fibonacci series is that when you really play with that and you do movements of people or objects or whatever you want to do, like I experimented with that when I was doing the quantum vortex stuff, when you set things up in this Fibonacci sequence or to those particular measurements, you can have ascended masters and everything else just go, you know, poof, right in front of you. They just appear. Yeah. And people see them, and they can talk with them, and they're so shocked. And it's like, well, it makes perfectly good sense to me that if you are elevating your frequencies and you are working with nature, because nature makes sacred places all the time and magical places and dangerous places too. But if you're working with something that is one of the laws of nature that we don't understand yet, you start putting these things together, then you can have magic in your life, real magic. You know, you can be communing with higher ascended beings, with those who are maybe our great, great, you know, million times great ancestors, because then you're traveling down that same wave. At least
yeah,
that's what
seems like
to me. Yeah,
I think there was a lot of extra energy and a lot of our ancestors coming back for the events late last year that centered around the 21st of December, the mm-hmm. end of the Mayan calendar. Mm-hmm. And I think people expected something to happen on that day and were disappointed when it was just another day as usual. But there was a lot of energy that day, and things set off differently. So that on the 22nd, the day after, it was like a whole new birth of a new formation here. And we're just taking baby steps, learning what's different. I think we're in a 217-day window that went from the end of that Mayan calendar up to when they're going to set forth with the new counting system, because over 26,000 years, there's a little bit of shift, and they're going to try and correct the error. Now, when I say they, I don't mean humans. I mean that there's something spiritual out there that operates to make everything perfect and divine, and that we all have part of that divinity that we hold, and we're learning how to use it.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. I like that. I too noticed the change in the energy, and I kind of celebrated by really changing my environment. And since then, I've noticed that it seems like it's much quicker to get things done now. Up to that point, it was like everything was slowing down, and mm-hmm. no matter what we did, there were delays and delays and delays. Well, now I'm noticing there's still some delays around us, but I'm seeing that, like, when there's nobody else involved in something and I'm just doing it, it just goes straight forward, just, you know, like gangbusters. And it's just this incredible waterfall of occurrences that starts generating, you know, more and more and more. And it's only when there's other people involved that are more in the 3D level that I notice that there's all these delays. It's like they can't believe that things could change so quickly, and so they don't. Whereas those of us that are more in the flow, we're going, hey, we can change this really quick. Let's go do that. And everybody goes, yeah, okay. And then poof, it's done. It's pretty awesome. Yes.
I think you're right. And I think that there are places where people who are listening who don't understand what we're talking about can connect in. I like the Galactic Free Press, which every day has something new and interesting about the patterns that the Earth is changing. I'm as a chemist, I buy the Gaia theory from Lovelock and Margulis 100% that the Earth is a living being on a different scale, and that all these scales are connected harmonically as fractals of each other, and that's what creates the holograph. It's pretty much as above, so below. And at some point, you get into a Mobius loop where it really is as above, so below, because what we're looking up at in the heavens is almost the same thing we'd be looking at if we were inside our own bodies looking at just the nucleuses of all the different cells we could see. So I'm starting to see much bigger patterns that are going to change the form of science as we can accept it now.
Yeah, and it's been interesting watching some of the people who are stuck in the scientific dogma. And I know that the university that you guys are creating is going to, you know, blow the doors off of that kind of stuff. So I'm very happy about that. And before I forget, why don't you go ahead and give listeners the website and, you know, how to get there.
It's called the Northwest Education and Training Institute, NWETI.com. And I'm going to be setting up courses in soil chemistry and water chemistry for this spring. We've got the ability now to offer continuing education credits, but we still can't break into the university-dominated mode of offering actual course credits for anything. It seems that the structure of the system is set up to fail, and it's going to be all-inclusive. And so I'm good with that, because I think that as we bring a new world to light, as many mechanisms that are holding us back by the way we do things now can change and we can move forward. I'm especially excited about intentional communities developing, because as people put forth the presence of I am to just build a new life, I think we're going to be able to see where different communities will work with different assumptions and observations, and that we'll be able to once again regenerate a redundancy of different ways to do things that'll make it so that everything runs smoothly, as opposed to the one-size-fits-all and everybody-has-to-use-it approach of the current system.
Yeah, there's a lot about the current system that needs to be changed, and, you know, I've been confronted with the scientific dogma, you know, many times in my life, and I mean, most of the time, if it's in my face, I either just laugh outrageously at the person who's spouting the dogma and refusing to believe it could be any other way, or I just feel, you know, really sad for them. And I see so much of this around there. People's minds have been so shut by academia that they can't see the truth, and they don't want to see the truth. You know, they're like hanging on with tooth and nail to this crappy dogma that science has put forth and, you know, hidden things, the truth from people if they knew it. It's like the religious dogma, same thing, you know?
Yes, we can list all the different scientists like Tesla and Schauberger who you're not allowed to know about. And most of the time, when they roll out something new and improved, it's just somebody's old invention that they've been sitting on until it falls apart. But we're at places where we can do things without the energy requirement that folks said we needed. The second law of thermodynamics works in all closed systems, but why do we assume we have a closed system?
Well, same thing with time. You know, people assume that time is real, and it's not even real.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, most people, they just can't grasp that, and they can't grasp the fact that changing your frequency changes the rules that you're playing with. And yeah. Rick and I have had many discussions about this, and you know, he was telling me that he co-wrote, or actually wrote the book, one of the several of the books, actually, the Carlos Castaneda books, and had some pictures of Don Gennaro actually flying, and you know, things like that. And I'm like, you know, I've seen this kind of stuff. So, you know, you're preaching to the choir with me. You don't have to convince me. I know this stuff happens, and I've done a lot of strange stuff myself. But what I notice is the so-called normal laws of physics don't apply when you're in one of those moments. And so if you're truly having different physics in each dimension and each universe that you're venturing into, it could be just slightly different, but I mean, you know, you could be off a tenth of a hertz and it's a whole other dimension.
Yeah, and there's no question that the way time works, it is entirely reversible. But you don't get back on the same path that you left when you take it in reverse. So there have been times when I've come up to a deadline where I just said, okay, I need this window of time and I can get my stuff done, and I'll embed myself in what I'm doing, and I'll finish the work and I'll look up and hardly a moment has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, yep. Because I was focused on everything, it's like time stopped to allow me to finish what I was working on.
Yeah. Well, and that works very much, too, when you have a dangerous moment. You know, I've had time slow down incredibly when I've been in danger, and I've had plenty of time to think of what to do and to get myself moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And it's like you watch everything around you go into complete slow-mo. And, you know, people say, well, you know, how did you get out of that? Or, you know, how did you manage that? It's like, well, time stood still. And I did what I had to do. And then when I was safe, time started up again. Now, how the heck does that happen? But, you know.
Yeah, and my question is that when you lose gaps of time, do you get them back at some other time?
Maybe.
Is there a conservation of time?
I don't know. You know, it doesn't feel to me like there's really a conservation of time. But I think that maybe what has to happen is if you're in the same timeline when you slow this time down, that maybe there are other times when it does have to be speeded up in order to maintain the illusion that there is time. And
yeah, I've often thought that when you make a key and critical decision, mm-hmm. you take off on one timeline direction, but you actually also set up a whole other universe where you made the opposite decision, and that runs with the opposite decision on a different scale. And if the decision had no bearing, eventually the timelines come back into each other. But if the decision took you in a totally different direction, you can have several of us running concurrently, and every so often the universe has to take out a few of our clones at different levels just to keep order in things. So we have these near-death experiences, which are actually death to a number of us that have been generated on different timelines where we're not near as relevant, so we can get the work that we're here to do done in the time that we're here.
Oh, that's interesting. Very, very interesting. And that makes sense, because I know, you know, I do what I call flipping dimensions. where I'll flip through, you know, a couple of dimensions. And the only way I know to get out of it is to go back to sleep. Because I'll wake up and I'll know I'm in a different dimension. It's the same type of thing, but it's like it is down that other path, you know, that I made that other decision. And
yeah, there's a good piece of science fiction by Neal Stephenson written 2 or 3 years ago called Anathem, A-N-A-T-H-E-M, that really gets into the many worlds theory and different timelines. And if you have enough chances at doing something, eventually you will succeed in doing it, and you can make those chances by how you interpret your time.
I'm just wondering if that's what the quantum jumping is all about, you know, Bert Goldman's quantum jumping. Because I mean, you know, I never paid a whole lot of attention to it just because I'm cognizant that I leap into other dimensions, and I've had psychics mention that and everything else too, but I already knew I was doing it. And the way I can tell is something will be slightly different. And then I'll go, wait a minute, you know, that this was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And people go, no, it wasn't. Whoa, okay. I remember that it was this way. And I thought what was going on a couple years ago, I kind of grokked onto this one idea that what I'm doing is I'm going through and I'm correcting timelines, my own timelines, you know, where something wasn't quite right. And I feel like what I'm doing is I'm gathering all of the energy back to me. It's like I'm going around, I'm fixing this, fixing that. When it's fixed, then I can pull it back to me. And it's like I have to pull all these strings back in this lifetime.
That's interesting. And do you think that when we pass away in this lifetime, we are reincarnated in another lifetime, either in the past or in the future, and just continue to be the same being but in a different essence form?
I have had that thought, that that could be one of the things that we do, but I don't think by any means it's the only way we do it. I think that what's going on is a lot more intense and complex than that. But I think also what we do is we meet up with the other parts of ourselves, such as the twin flame. And when you've healed that relationship and you have come together and, you know, retained or coalesced again into one, then you go find another twin flame couple that's become one. And so you're each twin flames, you know, because now you're one being again.
Well, that makes sense. And you get up to, yeah, in the mathematics that I've worked out, 4 is the right number of participants for a working group, because there's always direct interaction between any 2 people in the group. But there's some other key numbers also, like 12 and 24 and 72 are all key numbers. But it's amazing how certain numbers resonate a lot better than other numbers. And it's also interesting how there's odd numbers which provide symmetry. You can see, like, the circle of life as totally symmetric, but as 19 circles.
19 is one of those magic numbers. Actually, 19.5, I think, is the main number that everybody's talking about now in torsion physics and you know, as one of the main numbers for all of the ancient wonders that we're still puzzling about. So 19 is interesting.
I like 13 better.
I like 13. I've always considered 13 to be lucky, actually. Because if you think about it, everybody says, oh, there were 12 apostles. Yeah, and then there was the one Christ. That's 13. It's like, hello.
So. Yeah, 12 and 13 are related in a right triangle, the 5-12-13 triangle, which is pretty interesting when you look at it, because there's only a few right triangles that fit with whole numbers like that.
See, this is all stuff that we should have been taught from kindergarten.
Yeah, but they were too busy brainwashing us to accept things like democracy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, why are we voting anyway? Is there anything that changes when each of us votes?
Not a thing. And unfortunately, the populace doesn't know that. They think that our votes count. And they don't stop to consider the Electoral College and the fact that the only people that are presented to us for being voted on are the ones that are the puppets. So,
right.
You know, I mean, it's such a farce. It's unbelievable.
Yes, it's the Chinese menu philosophy of politics. One from column A or one from column B.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. I look at all this stuff and I go, you know, I have felt for a long time, ever since I was a little kid, I never felt like I fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that those of us that feel that way can't fit in. It's that we don't want to. Because you look at all this insanity that's going on around us, and it's like, you want me to be part of that? Why?
Yeah.
You
know? I took off for a couple months. I went to Montana to work on a chemistry mining project, mm-hmm. and I didn't have the internet, and I wasn't watching any news or that. I could turn on music because I had a laptop, but it wasn't connected to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got back out and spent a couple days looking to see what had happened in the 2 months, mm-hmm. there was nothing that happened. it was all the same as what I had left. I guess the only thing that happened was they lost power at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that big tragedy, huh? Yeah.
No, but I bet that it was something that was, let's say, structured as opposed to random.
Yeah, well, that's funny, structured, because they said it was because of the old structure of the place that happened.
I think it had to do with the ferries and that they were upset that San Francisco was losing so badly, so that they pulled the plug and changed everything.
There you go.
San Francisco almost came back.
Yeah, that's it. Yep, interesting stuff. Well, we have a question here.
Okay.
Someone wants to know if you have a favorite number. Let's see, when someone has a favorite number, have a meaning to it. What? I'm guessing it's a favorite number because there's a meaning to it and they should pay attention to it.
I would think so. I think that all the different numbers have meanings, but mm-hmm. that it's not always obvious what the meaning is, and that mathematics is really, by taking numbers and transforming them into other numbers so rapidly with all sorts of things like geometry and calculus and that, mm-hmm. we've forgotten that each number has its own essence also. Mm-hmm. There's a series of books called the Wooden Books, and one of them goes into sacred geometry. I think Miranda Lundy is the author of it. And she talks about each number and what that number conveys as meaning. And really, in past societies, every number had meaning and people knew what those meanings were. Now, we're not allowed to think that numbers could actually have meaning because we're taught that mathematics is pure and all you can do is manipulate the number to get another number.
Well, it is pure, but it's way beyond what they're teaching because they don't know. One of the things that the clarification on the question is, does it have a certain meaning to it for them specifically? I would say yes. And the reason I say that is because, first of all, we are frequencies. We are a string of frequencies that make us up the way we are. And everything around us is frequency. So mm-hmm. every number that has a meaning to us that we feel a connection with is going to have a much deeper meaning and may indeed be the keynote of our existence. And, you know, not in what sequence it came in, you know, as far as whether it's the first number or the last number, because each number is vitally important. It's more like, you know, maybe when we were created, as the first separate spark of our beingness, and then, you know, we've traveled God only knows where, but as we were created with that particular number, and maybe that's our thing. You know, that guides us through every lifetime, and that's like our truth, you know, our singular truth.
That could be.
Yeah.
It leads me to the rationalization that Douglas Adams must have had a hard life with his number as 42.
I have always loved that. The first time that I read that in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when, you know, when he presented that whole thing about how we have the answer, the earth and everything on it, the entire creation is a giant organic computer, and the answer is 42, but nobody remembers the question.
Mm-hmm.
I laughed so hard. I put the book down and just laughed and laughed and laughed. I thought that was the funniest damn thing I'd ever heard.
It makes sense when anybody asks me something, I don't know the answer. I always say 42.
Me too. But I always give the nod to Douglas Adams for that one.
Yep, and it's the default number.
And it just cracks me up because when you think about it, you add 4 and 2 together, it's 6. Well, numerology, 6 is the number of teaching and of family and healing and community and things like that. So the answer to everything is 42, of course. Makes
mm-hmm.
perfectly good sense. And, you know, like I've looked at several numbers. Like I always loved the number 7. Now, 7, if you look at the numerology study, 7 is a toxic number for me. But 7 is a sacred spiritual number. And so you kind of look at that and go, okay, what does that mean? You know, spirituality is toxic for me? I don't think so.
Maybe the form of it is, and that's what's changing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. I mean, there's a lot of stuff changing, and like I find myself more drawn to numbers now than I ever have been. Of course, I, you know, avoided math like the plague, but that was because of mindset. You know, I got brainwashed along with a lot of other girls. You know, girls just can't do math, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of that in our when we were growing up, where they had shop courses for boys and home ec for girls, and I always felt the girls got cheated, and I would have rather learned to cook than to make a screwdriver.
Now, see, I would have really loved to have learned how to fix things. And I remember as a kid, I used to take things apart, and I could never put them back together and make them work because I had to understand how they worked. And I wanted to understand, and my dad was one of those guys that if you needed a part, he'd just go make it for you. He was a machinist. And he had that sense of how things work. He could usually look at something for a few minutes and figure it out. And I thought, that's what I want to do. Not to be a machinist, but, you know, I wanted to understand, how do you take something apart and look at it and figure out how it works? But I wasn't gifted with that. I wanted it, but I didn't have it. I could do that with people pretty well. Well, not take them apart, but, you know, I put them back together pretty well, so...
That's a thing that we're all going to need. I think that psychologically we go through those times where we really worry about our own sanity because we don't feel that things work the way that everybody else seems to think they work. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the aha moment when we realize we're right, not them.
I know. I've mentioned that many times to my psychologist friends because it used to be that if you thought that everybody in the world was crazy but you, that you were definitely the one that was crazy, and you can't say that anymore. You know, nowadays it's like, oh, holy crap, I am the only one that's sane out here.
Yeah, I think that if you believe what you think, that's the key criteria, that a lot of people get in trouble because they profess things that they don't actually believe, and they end up tying themselves in knots. But if you assume that you're correct and go through and do something, other people come and say, well, you can't do that, and you show them the results, and you've already done it. And if you don't let people bring you down to their level by telling you something can't be done, anything you want to do can be done.
I totally agree. You know, I used to run into that with one of my husbands. I've had a few. And one of them would spend a half an hour telling me, nope, can't do that. That's impossible. Can't be done. And I would get so disgusted, I would just look at him and I'd just heave the sigh. And I'd turn around in 5 minutes, I'd have it done.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just sit there in shock. And I would be like, I don't understand why you immediately go to, that can't be done. Nope, can't be done. Absolutely not. And the time you're taking to tell me it can't be done, I've got it done.
Yeah.
And,
it's almost,
you know,
like
why,
that's the default reflex that's been taught into people.
Yeah. And it's so limiting. It's so horrible. Because if you would just, you know, look at things and, like, open the heart and open the mind and just kind of go, what is this? Or what can be done? What do I do with it? Like, you know, when I was going around with the quantum vortex stuff, I didn't know what the heck could be done with it. Fred Bell certainly didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had several conversations with him where I said, Fred, you know, how does this work? And he'd go, I don't know. You're going to tell me. And I'm like, what the hell do you mean I'm going to tell you? I'm not a physicist. You know, how am I supposed to figure this out?
Well,
but you know what? About
5 years ago, when I first learned of Nassim Harriman and his physics, where the black hole was at the center of every atom, and I had to think about that for a while. But the deeper I got into Nassim's physics, the more it started making true sense, as long as you stood it alone and didn't try and bring the other parts of physics into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the stuff that they're working on with the isotopic vector matrix is the essence of generating energy from a point source. And
now
that we're real close to having unlimited energy. But one of the things that's dragging us back is this focus that we have that we're running out of fossil fuels.
Oh, yeah, it's such a lie,
and
too.
The whole idea of what fossil fuels are and how things work is such a fundamental basis for everything that we've been taught that people just can't get it into their heads that they haven't been taught correctly.
Yeah, they can't get it into their heads that there have not been enough dinosaurs ever to create the amount of oil that there is. They don't understand the abiotic oil theory. They don't understand that that's basically blood of Mother Earth.
Yeah,
and, you know,
and
so she makes it.
Pressure.
Yeah.
And that as you get to different depths, there are pressure changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so sure that we don't have a holographic universe to the point where our spheres are hollow and only seem like they're dense because that's what we've been told.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense because, you know, you start talking about the middle Earth and the inner Earth and all these kinds of things. And, yeah, there's different pressures, so there would be different life forms, you know, at each major change that you have. And so for me, that kind of stuff is not outside my realm of possibilities.
Yeah, I got bollocksed up in the field of biochemistry where we started talking tonight because I couldn't accept how enzymes could have turnover rates 10 to the 6th, 10 to the 7th per second.
Mm-hmm.
To me, physically, that wouldn't be achievable. But when I realized that you're not talking about a single enzyme doing a million reproductions in a second, what you're talking are millions of enzymes, each operating once or twice per second in bulk, and just having that much bulk, it starts to make sense when you start thinking about how many atoms and molecules there actually are in things that we can't even see because they're so small. And we lose fact of the fact that the scale is continuous all the way through and that it's only adjacent continuums that have to have the same physical properties. If we are not adjacent, all bets are off. The mathematics can be the same, but the reality can be quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that when you look at evidence for ghosts and interdimensionals, you know, and ETs and things like that, you're talking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I've never doubted their existence.
Yeah, me either. I've seen tons of them of all kinds, and some interactive, some not interactive. So some, you know, are actually just a magnetic pattern or maybe a time glitch, you know, where they're stuck repeating the same thing over and over, but it's not conscious. But, you know, I've seen enough strange stuff go on in my life that I realized that when you can bring your consciousness to a certain level, then you can actually expand your life. You know, you can expand, and I'm not talking about in time, but I suppose you could. But it's more like you can open up more doors. It's like moving from, you know, out of a closet into a room, and from the room into a great room, and from the great room into the entire home, and from the home into like a theater hall.
Sort of like C.S. Lewis's cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly, where it just keeps expanding. And I think that's what we're supposed to be looking towards instead of closing our minds down. And I mean, you know, I've seen a couple things. Like I just had somebody point out that I had a detractor out there that was saying some nasty things about stuff I said about the quantum vortex years ago. And I just started laughing. And bless her heart, the woman that was cluing me into this, she said, "Wow, you know, you're not taking this to heart." I said, "Why would I? This guy's so closed-minded. He's such an idiot." But, you know, I'm not going to get involved in an exchange with this guy because it's pretty clear to me there's nothing you can say to somebody whose mind is so shut that they don't see what's right in front of them. And, you know, they're incapable of going that next step and seeing that what they were taught in school was dogma. And, you know, I'm blessed that I get to talk to all these crazy physicists and such. And, you know, I get to see which way we're actually going with science and you know, what's real out there and the experiments that are being done that a lot of people that are stuck in the dogma have no idea about. They just, you know, poo-poo everything and they think they're right. And, you know, I looked at all that and I went, wow, isn't that sad that somebody's mind would be so closed off that they can't even contemplate that this other stuff is going on, and they're denying all the evidence that's out there. And I just consider myself blessed, you know, when I encounter something like that, because it's like, wow, you know, I mean, I'm going to be able to see so much more and to go so much farther, so much quicker, because I'm not hanging on to anything that was. Now I'm looking at just what is. And I want to know what is more.
Yeah, as long as you're not tied to your sense of perspective, you can expand or contract your scale to wherever you want to focus. It's almost like there's a giant accordion, and sometimes it all gets scrunched together and you have to deal with everything all at once. But at other times, it's wide open, and your thinking controls your being.
Now, you know, I really like that analogy. And I just flashed upon, we're going to have to do another show on that particular analogy, because that makes perfectly good sense because of the musical reference and, you know, the octaves. And, you know, like I observed that we go through octave changes in our chakras that can be measured. And measured as a resonant frequency. And so it just was a really nice analogy. And, of course, we're at the end of the show already. Just seems like it flies by when we get
really
to talking about stuff. I know.
One of the things that Bob Marshall noticed about the harmonic octaves is that you tend to get four going up and then four going down and then a null before the next octave starts.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people miss that null and just go right into the next octave.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that in the Vastu, ancient Indian architecture, they had something called the Purushka Mandala that would go from an 8x8 64 square thing to a 9x9 81 square thing as it rotated. There's a lot more to that theory, too, that I'd love to explore down the road.
Oh, definitely. We'll have to. Well, we'll see if we can get Lloyd on for next week, and I'd love to have you, you know, part of that again, because there's a lot of concepts that I want to get out there for the audience that, you know, it's real important that we all get our minds cranked open fairly quickly now. So, so if you've got time next week, that would be fabulous. Let's do this again.
Okay, I don't know where in space I will be, but... I'm back in Oregon after spending a couple months in Montana, and so I'll be floating around and just connecting as best I can.
Okay, sounds good. Well, they're about to yank us out here, so thank you for being on the show.
Certainly, I enjoyed it.
Me too, always. So we've been talking with Dr. Lenny Time, and was tune in for more as we go on. And until next week, as always... Be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.